This is Pavlina Demchuk-Macquarie, producer and host of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. Welcome, Vitayu. I hope you'll enjoy this next podcast of a feature interview recently broadcast on the show. Links to all Nash Holos podcasts and the live broadcasts, as well as program details at www.nashholos.com. I have on the line with me now Mirko Petrio, the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress Vancouver branch president, and he has been following events in Ukraine very closely. He just tells me he was up until 6:30 this morning, got a couple of hours sleep, and then got up and resumed his watch on live streams. There are a lot of live streams online that are recording the events, watching history unfold, as he put it, and very troubling turns of events and almost too much to keep up with. So, Mirko, thank you so much for coming on to share what you've been watching.
Thank you, Paulette.
Now, we spoke on Saturday. We spoke, and there were things that were kind of coming, seemed to be coming to a head, and it looks like they have now.
Well, I think I pretty well predicted that that coming weekend would be a pivotal point, and in fact, you know, it became exactly that. What was happening? The 19th, which is Sunday, the 19th of January, is Vodokhreshche, or Epiphany in English, the day of Christ's baptism, and as it turns out, it's become a baptism by fire. Following that is the 22nd, which is actually today, and the 22nd is the anniversary of two important happenings in Ukrainian history. One is Independence Day in 1918, and the other is Union Day in 1919, when Western Ukraine and Eastern Ukraine came together. It's interesting that in Ukraine they call it Union Day, and they kind of forget about calling it Independence Day. And in fact, even the 24th of August is no longer called Independence Day. You've got to remember that it's, the government there is very much Russian dominated. So, you know, the whole thought of being independent from Russia is anathema to those people.
Well, independent, yeah. In general, Mirko, I mean, there is no independence.
Well,
apparently, right now, there's a civil war going on. There's a civil war going on like there was in 1918, 1919.
That is exactly what just started in the last day or two. Speaking of independence or lack of such, independence, I guess Ukraine is recognized as independent internationally, but in actual fact, on the ground, within the government, nothing changed since the days of the Soviet Union.
Well, I recall that, Mirko, last summer I was in Ukraine and touring around. The young fellow that was touring pointed at this tall building, and he said that is the tax department now. Mm-hmm. And he said it used to be the Communist Party headquarters. And nothing, only thing has changed is the sign.
Yep, that's exactly right. And, you know, there's still a Lenin statue standing all around, although a few have fallen recently.
A few have toppled, yeah, yeah.
But anyways, let's get right down to the events on the ground. On the 19th, Sunday the 19th, there was a very large crowd on the Maidan. There was a second crowd. Oh, I shouldn't say there was a second crowd. It started out as a... call it a car rally. Okay, they were going to drive to the Verkhovna Rada, which is the parliament, in protest of the law that was passed on the 16th. And I'm not sure whether we talked about the law, but the law is a joke. I mean, first of all, it was passed by 235 votes, while only 119 people were present in parliament at the time. So you get a feeling for how the Ukrainian legislature works. The law is an extreme crackdown on all kinds of personal liberties intended to facilitate the dismantling and crackdown on the Maidan demonstrations. And it was recognized around the world as being a draconian law, actually surpassing similar laws in Putin's Russia. So That was one of the other motivations for showing up on the Maidan, and that's why the crowd was quite large. And of course, there was this car rally to drive to the parliament, and it's driving up Hrushevsky Street, which is named after the first president of Ukraine in 1918. Surprise, surprise. And they get about half a kilometer up the street, if that, and they're just approaching the Dynamo soccer stadium when they are stopped by Berkut.
Now, who is Berkut?
Now, Berkut is, I best describe them as riot police. They used to be, in Soviet times, used to be referred to as OMON, which is a mobile strike unit. To be used against one's own people, of course. It's not a, it's not like an army or a marines type thing. This is kind of part of the interior troops, as they're called. But it's the elite and obviously most vicious and violent group of the so-called police. Anyways, they're stopped by the OMON, and. Berkut blocks the road with their buses. They were bussed in, and the crowd builds, and we end up with a shoving match. They start rocking the bus, for example, trying to turn it over. As the shoving match proceeds, Vitali Klitschko, who is one of the three opposition party leaders and potential presidential candidates. Probably the one with the highest popularity reading right now. He shows up, walks through the lines of the Berkut, and tries to dissuade the demonstrators from shoving the police around and break things up. Well, that didn't go too well at all. In fact, Klitschko basically got shoved back, and he's a pretty large boy.
He's the boxer. he's the boxer.
Current boxing champion at 6'9", and
6'9".
How many
wow.
pounds? But yeah, in very good shape. But he got shoved back. So what happened then is he turns around and drives to visit Yanukovych and his residence in Mezhigorye, which is a palatial walled community there that he lives in, to negotiate with Yanukovych. In the meantime, on by the Dynamo Stadium, the shoving proceeds. Suddenly, the bus that we're talking about catches fire. Another one catches fire. There is everything short of rifle fire, but there's combat going on. The Berkut are using actually rubber bullets too, but not initially. The rubber bullets come in a little bit later on, but they were using flashbang grenades. The reply from the crowd was Molotov cocktails.
Right, they've renamed them. What did they rename them?
Yeah, they'll be called Ukrainian cocktails, I guess. Anyways, these Ukrainian cocktails set four Berkut buses afire. Two command vehicles, these are very large trucks, Ural trucks. Two of those are set on fire, and they're all lined up and form a wonderful barricade. So on the one side you've got the crowd, and on the other side you've got Berkut.
So it's not you can't say it's peaceful anymore.
It's not peaceful. It stopped being peaceful at that point. Well, it wasn't peaceful before either on more than one occasion, but certainly it wasn't peaceful here. The change, and I guess the change probably dates back to January 11th when former Minister of the Interior Lutsenko was attacked, and the crowd was actually scaring the police rather than vice versa. They're making the police take their balaclavas off and identify themselves and kind of walk a gauntlet of shame back.
Right, then. And did that work? Or did that only work with those people and they've got their new forces coming in from outside?
Yeah, well, on the 19th, there were fresh forces. I estimate at least 700 Berkut on that day, and that number keeps increasing every day, by the way.
And these are obviously not people, probably, that have any kind
of... They have shields, they have armor, they have helmets.
Right, and no attachment to the people of Ukraine, probably.
As things develop, you'll see that exactly right. You know, the hopes that there's some attachment to Ukrainian values and the Ukrainian nation, they're in vain. They're in vain. They're a different people. Anyway, so it all turns out to, you know, rock throwing, Molotov cocktail throwing, stun grenade throwing. Every time there's a sortie of Berkut police, they try to catch somebody so they can jail them.
And of course, it's easier now with those new laws that were passed just a couple of days ago.
Yeah, there was some debate whether that particular law came in effect instantly or whether it takes until it's published publicly, which would have been the 22nd, in other words, today. But in either case,
ironically.
Yes, ironically, exactly right. Yeah, there was one other law that was passed on that particular day, and that was the law requiring internal passports in 1933. That was part of the technique of running the whole Domor genocide and ensuring that Ukrainians didn't run away and died.
And it's back? It's back?
Well, it's that date. That was also January the 22nd, 1933. So it's a key date in Ukrainian history. And,
right.
You know, both positive and negative. Anyways. Back to what's happening here on the 19th. The Berkut police brought in water cannon. That kind of established a gap between the police line and the demonstrators. And, of course, the water froze, so there was a skating rink between the two. The standoff and the fighting continued on the 20th. On the 20th, there were rubber bullets, definitely more rubber bullets used. The scary thing is there was also sniper fire with live ammunition. And in many ways aimed at journalists.
Right.
Journalists, you know, especially with film cameras, were feeding live pictures to the internet and. We're probably giving away the position of everything behind the lines here, so that's why that was happening. The ugliest scene on that day was a bit of a fight on top of the Dynamo Stadium gates. Now the gates is kind of a curved colonnade, and inside there were ticket booths. They're not there anymore, but on the roof at night. There is video of Berkut police or militia grabbing a couple of people, beating them mercilessly. And the end result of that was one person jumped off, probably about a 30, 40-foot jump, and survived. The other person was beaten and thrown off and is now dead. And that is, you know, everything but the throwing off is actually caught on video. The beating is caught on video. So
it's a horrible scene. Who filmed it?
The TV. It was live on Espresso TV.
Okay.
And that, by the way, Espresso TV live streaming is where you get to watch everything happening here.
And that's okay, what you've been doing that all night.
This is the 20th. On the 21st, the 21st was very interesting because it was a quiet day.
That's yesterday.
There was certainly the imitation of a ceasefire, possibly some negotiation. People went right up to the police line and were talking and things like that. And there was a nice large gap between the two lines. And not much violence was happening. And interesting tidbit of news that I picked up is the reason that happened is early in the morning on the 21st, a group of, and I have to call them Ukrainian commandos now, or some of the more militarily trained youth in the crowd, a group of 12, got in behind the lines And using diversionary tactics, they set fire to another Oman bus. And while the fire was being put out, they intercepted a shipment of supplies to Berkut. Basically, 10 cases of flashbang grenades. 3,400 grenades. Intercepted that and brought it back.
How would they have known about that?
They live there.
Now, you know, that is such a telling statement, Mirko.
Oh, it is. Exactly. So anyways, the interceptor shipment, it's actually on the 21st, the primary weapon that Berkut was using were these flashbang grenades.
Mirko, I have to stop you now. We're coming to the top of the hour. We will have to bring present some messages, but I would like to bring you back. Please stay on the line. We'll only be a couple of minutes, and bring us up to speed then. I'm speaking with Mirko Petrio, the president of the Ukrainian-Canadian Congress, Vancouver branch in Vancouver, and we will be back with more from Mirko after these messages. And you're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina in downtown Nanaimo, broadcasting to Greater Vancouver, the Gulf Islands, Sunshine Coast, and Northwest Washington here on 101.7 FM. Also online, chly.ca. I'm your host, Pavlina Demchuk-McQuarrie. I have on the line with me Mirko Petrio. And Mirko, welcome back. And please continue. You're telling us what was happening yesterday.
Yeah, so we're now to the 22nd, which is today. And a little factlet that tends to support this story about the seizure of the grenades is that the Ministry of the Interior announced that they are now allowing Berkut to use Russian-made, supplied by Oman, the Russian Oman, flashbang grenades, which happen to be six times more powerful than the smaller ones that they had been using up to now. And so that announcement was made, and they also announced that they were going to condone live fire and so on. What happened between yesterday and today? Sniper fire. We now have, and I'm jumping ahead, but as of this minute, we have five killed on Maidan and Hrushevskoye. First one was the gentleman that was thrown off the colonnade that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
The remaining, certainly at least two of the remaining four were shot. One was shot in the head and neck, and he is actually an Armenian Ukrainian from Dnipropetrovsk.
Oh.
There's on the internet, there's a video that he produced a week ago, where he is quoting Taras Shevchenko, and he is quoting the poem Kaukaz. We all remember the words "Boritesya poborite," you know, struggle, you will overcome. Those words of Shevchenko, he's quoting those, and of course, coming from Armenia, yeah, he lives, he hails from the Kaukaz Mountains. So there was a very strong linkage, and he's speaking very, very good Ukrainian in this video. A very painful moment is to watch this young gentleman knowing that he is now dead. Second victim, again, interestingly enough, turns out to be a Belarusian Ukrainian. He was shot through the chest. The other two I don't have information on yet. While this was going on, Ihor Lutsenko, and I'm not sure if he's related to Yuri Lutsenko or not.
Now, who is Ihor and who is Yuri? Who are these Lutsenko men?
A demonstrator, as far as I know, right now.
And the other
name seems to be recognized in Ukraine. I'm sorry, I can't place him in the past here. And also, one of his friends by the last name of Verbitsky were in hospital. They had been wounded and had been taken to hospital.
So
men in black walk into the hospital in full public view, seize these two gentlemen, drag them off without any overcoats or anything.
Out of the hospital?
Out of the hospital.
Out of the hospital bed?
Out of the hospital bed. Okay. Drag them off, not to be heard from for a long time. Inquiries are made to the local regular police, and you know, I guess they started some searches and so on, but nobody knew anything. Eventually, Ihor Lutsenko comes crawling out of the woods outside of Kyiv, so many, many, many kilometers away, in the snow, badly beaten but alive. More recently, news came that in the area that he crawled out of, they have now found two bodies of people that were tortured to death. So this is in addition to the count of five killed that I'm talking about. So we're actually talking seven killed right now. And that's the kind of scenario that is going on. But anyways, very interesting things happening today. I started watching live TV, and everything was very peaceful. In fact, the demonstrators had built a new barricade further up the street from the burned buses. The police were further back, but everything was very peaceful. There were people right up against the police talking to them, obviously trying to convince them to switch sides or to become more decent or whatever. As it turns out later, not very successfully. And this goes on for a few hours in the morning. Then suddenly the police, the reinforcements come behind them, and you suddenly realize we're not talking about 1,000 or even 1,500. We probably have 2,000 police here. And they start marching forward. Well, the crowd scatters. The crowd tries to hold them at the second barricade that they had made. The police make a turtle out of shields, old Roman military tactic, walk right up to the barricades, and from under the shields, they start taking down the barricades. And eventually, they dismantle a barricade breakthrough. They stop at the line of burned-out buses. Similar kind of situation. There's a little, and by now the crowd is down to dozens. We're not talking a crowd of thousands or hundreds. There's only dozens of people facing thousands of Berkuts.
Oh, it just switched around.
It switched around. Oh. Yes, yes.
And these Berkut.
Berkut continues marching. It's actually kind of north, kind of northwest on Hrushevsky, downhill. Towards Khrushchatyk, which would be close to Maidan, marches down, and the crowd is scattered and runs away to close to where, if anybody's familiar with KU, there's a traffic circle with a beautiful circle in the middle with flowers and plants and all that. Anyways, right near that area, actually. But what the crowd does, or a certain member of the crowd, they start piling tires in the middle of the street and setting fire to them.
Tires, wow, that harkens back to apartheid in Africa a few years back.
And they make these tire fires, and they make one, then two, then three, then four, then five, and suddenly you realize what they have done. The horrendous black smoke from the tire fires is being blown by a northwest wind uphill, up Hrushevsky Street, straight into the faces of 2,000 Berkut officers.
Oh, that's pretty smart.
They stand for a while, then they back up a bit to where there were two other burned-out buses. And there's lots of these burned-out vehicles, by the way.
Oh. What a war zone.
A BTR arrives from behind them. That is a six-wheeled armored personnel transport vehicle.
So we have armored tanks, essentially.
Yeah, it's a small tank. It's got a little small cannon on top, machine guns, and that whole thing. So one of these vehicles arrives. And at the moment here, it is used to push some of these burned-out buses out of the way. But the smoke is getting thicker and thicker. And suddenly you realize that the crowd has taken a new tactic, and they're using hooks to grapple the burning tires and move them uphill closer to the Berkut. So as the Berkut retreats, the fire follows them up the hill until they actually end up at the original line of burned-out buses. And by the end of the day, the tire fire is up against the buses on the one side, and Berkut obviously had to retreat to pretty well the same position that they started in the morning. And all this was done without hand-to-hand combat by a crowd, you know, in the dozens. You know, eventually it grew to maybe a few hundred. But they pushed back this force using smoke.
That is amazing.
While this is happening, the three political leaders are negotiating with Yanukovych, so they're not present on the Euromaidan. However, former Minister of the Interior, Yuri Lutsenko, who was recently released from jail, and I think many of us are familiar with the trumped-up charges that Yanukovych used to jail him. Well, he's released from jail now. And in fact, he was beaten up, as you recall, January 11th. Well, he's now speaking on the Maidan and making some very important announcements. And this is key. This may be even important, more important than the battles that I described. That everybody, the council, the political parties, have agreed to form a parallel government.
What does that mean?
The head or spokesman for the government will be Vitaly Klitschko.
Hmm.
They are forming their own police. And in fact, Euromaidan had naturally formed its own police. These so-called tituska, the thugs that were hired by Yanukovych to disrupt things, they're using these convoys of cars driving around, capturing these guys. In fact, Klitschko was shown capturing two of these guys and dragging them off for public shaming on the Euromaidan.
Well, when you're 6'9" and that a boxer, you can do that.
That
helps.
Works.
But what
even
a peaceful.
More importantly, Lutsenko reminded Ukrainian history, reminded the UPA, which was the Ukrainian insurgent army, which fought the Germans and the Soviets until the early 50s, and whose red and black flag has become definitely one of the symbols of the Euromaidan. Interestingly enough, he spoke about the heroism and asked for the people to repeat that level of heroism. He asked for anybody with firearms to come. They are forming their own military force, realizing that Yanukovych's forces are armed, and they're no longer shy about shooting. They are preparing for a firefight that way.
Wow.
Here are the facts. In KU, which is a city of 2 million and change, I'm sure, there are 400,000 registered firearms, easily outguns police and army put together.
Wow.
Okay. In Ukraine, there are 2 million registered firearms. And the hope is that people will come and we'll be able to offer a viable resistance to the forces of Yanukovych when he comes to break up Euromaidan. And that is something that I think a lot of people are expecting to happen literally in the next hours or so.
So this parallel government is forming right before our very eyes.
Yes. It was announced today on the 22nd of January. So the 22nd of January has become very much the date of the renewal of Ukrainian independence as opposed to the independence of a piece of the USSR.
Right.
Or a fake independence of a piece of the USSR.
Right.
So it's a historic date already. It's a date where blood has been shed. The sad thing is that it's also a date where the unity of Ukraine may have been shaken. The government of Crimea, or Krim, has declared that they want to negotiate independence from Ukraine, or to join Russia. I'm not quite clear which of the two.
Just when did this happen?
Today.
Today.
Today. Flip side of that, yesterday the Crimean Tatars marched or drove off to KU to join the Euromaidan. Okay, so the Tatars are on our side, but the Russians, that, as we know from history, pushed them out of Crimea. They're definitely not. The other sad note, well, there's a few more. In Donetsk, there was a miniature Maidan, as there was in all major cities. Unfortunately, it's not well supported in the East. And just the local thugs, the titushke, as we call them now, were able to break it up. So Donetsk Maidan has been broken up.
And this
Kharkiv,
was
the mayor of Kharkiv is in full support of Yanukovych and is asking Yanukovych to take sterner measures to counter this revolution. And it is now a revolution. There's no other word for it. So.
Yeah.
It's openly being called a revolution. So there's a flip side of that. The actual province around Kharkiv, the governor of the province has cast his lot with the Maidan, with the people. Other bits of news: soldiers and garrisons in Lviv are asking to be released. They are resigning. There is a fear that they would be sent to fight their own people, which is, you know, totally non-constitutional, etc. But they fear that. There is an additional police battalion coming from Donetsk to reinforce the ones in KU. Despite all that, there was one other incident which was not shown on TV. But literally a block or a half block away from the building of the president's administration, again, this flying group of commandos, possibly the same ones that seized the grenades, you can see their methodology here, apparently attacked Berkut, burned one of their buses, and this burned bus is now a half block from the building of the president's administration. So I take it he won't be going there soon. So there was a little strike in the backfield, so to speak.
Mirko, thank you so much for joining us. I'm speaking with Mirko Petriov, the Ukrainian Canadian Congress Vancouver branch president. Mirko, I'm going to have to unfortunately cut our conversation short.
Oh,
but
that's a shame, because there's a couple of more items.
Well, I can give you two more minutes, because I've got another guest coming on. Okay.
The Prime Minister of Ukraine, Mykola Azarov, which most of us will recognize, a very old gentleman, isn't in Ukraine. He went to Davos, Switzerland, for the economic conference.
Oh, what a great time to leave the country.
During the conference, everybody had a 1 minute of silence for the dead in KU.
Good for them.
And the last piece of news is that Azarov is persona non grata, has been kicked out of the conference.
Excellent.
Next, the U.S. has revoked the visa for Zakharchenko, the current Minister of the Interior, and maybe others. They don't announce all the names. Austria, there's talk about freezing financial assets. There's a lot of financial assets of the oligarchs in Austria. So there is some activity along that line too. So the world is with the demonstrators, is with the free Ukrainian government now. I think we can recognize it as such. It'll be interesting to find out what our Ukrainian embassy in Ottawa does, which way it wavers.
Yes, and that's another story we'll have to talk about
another
time.
We'll save that story for a few days from now.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm so sorry that I don't have more time to keep you on there.
I think we're right up to date right now.
Excellent. Great. Well, so if anybody wants to continue following this on their own, what would you recommend that they go online?
Espresso TV, single S's, okay? So espresso.tv/stream.
Now,
TV stations are being attacked, too, so I can't promise that Espresso TV will be around.
Now, and is Espresso TV, is there any English language commentary?
It is all in Ukrainian.
Okay, but
pictures tell.
Pictures tell a lot on their own.
Right, that's exactly. Right. Yeah. And moving pictures tell that much more. So
right. Okay.
It is an absolutely fascinating situation.
And they can also go to your Facebook page, because you're posting articles and YouTube videos.
If you're strictly English speaking, the Facebook page is Yaroslav's Revenge.
You want to spell that?
Yaroslav with a W, so it's Y A R O S. L-A-W-F, Revenge.
Revenge, and that's on Facebook.
and that's on Facebook. And okay. It started out as a Facebook page for my book, for my mm-hmm. little thriller. Mm-hmm. Reality is more thrilling than anything I can possibly write right now. So yeah. For the last 3 weeks or so, it's a chronicle. It's a chronicle of events with links to video, links to articles, links to pictures, etc.
Okay. Awesome. So as well, I'll be posting things on my Facebook page as well. And failing that, just Google Euromaidan on Google, and you'll
and Twitter.
And Twitter and YouTube.
Hashtag
Euromaidan, and also on YouTube. And thank you once again, Mutiko, and go get some sleep if you can. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yes, and I'm watching burning buses here as we hang up. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Mutiko.
Bye bye.
And I was speaking with Mutiko Petrio of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress in Vancouver, and you are listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on CHLY 101.7 FM, Radio Malaspina. I hope you enjoyed this feature interview from Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In addition to interviews such as the one you just heard, Nash Holos is host to many other outstanding features produced by people who love to share their love of Ukrainian culture with non-Ukrainian speakers. From Ukrainian recipes and cooking tips to reviews of English language books on Ukrainian themes, views on Ukrainian politics and current affairs, culture, folklore, and of course great Ukrainian music, traditional and contemporary, by artists from Ukraine, Canada, and around the world. So join me, Pavlina, and my fascinating guests on the weekly radio broadcasts in Vancouver and Nanaimo. You can listen to the live broadcasts on air or online, or download the podcast and listen later in your own good time. You'll find program information, broadcast details, and podcast links at www.nashholos.com. So until next time, do побачення!